save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake. Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer rear tine tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now. Save big money at
Menards. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's because every single fucking song was like, nigga, 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 nigga. Willigity, black, 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 black. My dick this, my dick that. Slavery. Uncle Sam, Uncle Tom.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Brittany.
And we are For Color Nerds.
Which is the conversations that black people have when white people are not in the room.
But we record them and put it on the internet.
Yeah. I just want to give you guys a visual right now. Eric is wearing a dashiki.
I am. I'm my best self when I wear my dashiki. I have like two of them.
Honestly, my main visual reference of you in a dashiki, because I actually have never seen you wear yours in person, I don't think.
Oh, really?
I've only seen you wear them in the pictures of you with all your LeBron sprites.
Y'all gotta, to steal from Bodega Boys a little bit, shouts out to LeBron Sprite. LeBron's Mix.
I didn't know that it existed until.
It's so good.
So I'll give you guys a little background. A couple months ago, John Vaughn came to visit. He drove, because you know he moved to Chicago.
Yeah.
I was going to say RIP, but he's still alive.
Might as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Oh, okay.
Squad took a loss.
I know, squad took a heavy loss. I mean, that's a nice thing for you to say about John. Yeah. Anyway, John came back to visit. He came to pay respects to Peanut. And he came on his sojourn with, I would say, like, buckets of LeBron Sprite.
No. So, John, okay, let me tell you.
Because you took a bunch of photos with the LeBron. All right, tell us a story. All
right, so John came. So me and John had actually recently reconnected over our love for LeBron's Mixed Sprite, you know? Like, you have.
Wait, you and John ever disconnected?
Me and John disconnect like every other week.
Okay, true.
So we were on the phone. You know, we were both like, oh shit, like, yo, I'm having some LeBron's Mix and it's amazing. And then we were both talking about how you can't really find it anymore. Uh-huh. You know, and this was a while ago.
I didn't even know this shit existed.
It was like a limited edition, just like, it was like, yo, LeBron just came. It was LeBron's gift to us for the summertime after the finals. You know,
right.
He knew.
Did he win the finals?
No.
Who won the final? Steph Curry with the pot.
Golden State.
Steph Curry with the pot is.
So we were like, damn, you can't really find LeBron's Mix anywhere. So when he got here, first stop we made, we went to go get some Wingstop.
Yeah, true. John.
Gotta, you know.
Loves Wingstop.
Gotta respect. Mm-hmm. But after that, we went on a tour, like three different bodegas, and we came up on the right bodega, like not three blocks from my house or my apartment. And they had like 5 2-liters of LeBron's Mix. And we were like, oh shit. So like John and I both, because we didn't have no cash. I don't know why we went to bodegas with no cash.
Oh.
We both took out like $40 out the ATM. And bought every bottle of LeBron's Mixed Sprite in the fucking bodega.
That's how that happened?
Yeah. And so when we got back, we were like, yo, we just stunned on everybody. We got this beautiful bounty here. We gotta take some pictures with it. So we arranged them in like different, you know, scenarios.
Configurations,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And we took some pictures with our LeBron's Mix, and we drank. I didn't drink water for about a week because all I drank night and day. I woke up and had a cup of LeBron's Mix.
How was the viscosity of your blood that week? How was that? How was that pumping?
A little sugary, a little thick. But you know what? I was happy. I was happy. Thank you, LeBron. I appreciate that.
I didn't know that, but you
need to bring it back.
You had a fitted. This is also like right after the baby was born, and this was the first time I had seen you. It was like the first time I actually physically seen you.
I didn't, you know, because I'd like ducked off.
Yeah, right. You were, you know, you was on the ground.
Yeah.
You're in the zone. Okay. That's a good way to describe it. So you had been talking about this dashiki, which you were like, I took it to my tailor, which is a crazy fucking thing to say, first of all. And also, fuck you. I forgot you about this dashiki because I said I wanted one. And everybody wanted, I wanted one.
Everybody texted me.
And then you secretly went and got dashiki and took it to the tailor and then got all of LeBron Sprite. Yeah. And then you were like, weren't you like laying next to your LeBron Sprite?
I was laying on the ground with my hand in my hands with LeBron, with my head in my hands with LeBron's mixed Sprite, like surrounding
two
me.
Liters two of liters of LeBron's mixed Sprite.
Like seven of them just surrounding me. I was like, that's why I'm saying, like, my dashiki, I have my best memories like affixed when I wear my dashiki.
You've had dashiki for 4 months.
I'm going to start wearing it underneath my clothes like a Jewish prayer, like cloth.
I mean, that's a way. That's the way to go about it.
You gotta stay real all the time.
You're like a superhero. That way, if anything, if some real wild shit goes down, like, rip his shirt off.
Yo,
I don't even want to say the superhero name that crossed my mind. I'm not gonna say it.
It's a couple of them. They start with N.
So I'm gonna let our black audience marinate in that for a minute. The rest of y'all wash your ears out. But so you got your dashiki on today.
Yeah, feeling good.
Well, you know I'm celebrating my birthday tonight.
Oh, yeah, you are. I forgot. But you would never let me forget because you've been talking about it since I saw you.
Scorpio season. Dead center. Scorpio season. It's time. Got to get ready.
We're getting active tonight.
What's that?
We're getting active tonight.
And my birthday is actually, when this show drops, my birthday is coming weekend, Sunday, November 15th. But I'm celebrating a week early because, you know, I wanted to keep my next weekend free to do what I got to do, sleep and stuff. And
I say clarify.
Oh, yeah. So like next weekend, try to keep it breezy. But this weekend, I was like, you know what? Bam, about to have a birthday celebration. But a celebration is a loose term.
Nah, I mean we're gonna get like look. My wonderful father-in-law is coming to take my child for the whole night.
Oh shit.
Oh, we're gonna have fun tonight.
It's crazy because everybody's been like, people come to me like, oh, I'm about to get fucked up this week. Yo, I'm like, I'm tired. Like, I just want to eat a hot dog and go to bed.
Damn. If we're not gonna have fun any other night, we're gonna have fun tonight.
I know. That's why I want you to wear your shirt. I still want you to wear your shirt.
Yeah, I'm gonna come out live.
Yeah, but I mean it's real black in here. I'm about to call you LeBron. That's not your name. But I don't know, maybe you're open to that. I don't know.
I mean, it would, you know, that's a compliment. Yeah. I'm not LeBron, but you know. Close. I got some ball skills, but ball is life.
Y'all got the same hairline going. But
I was about to say, shots fired.
Shots fired. Pew, pew. But, you know, it was right there. I didn't even know I was going to do that. It was right there. But that's my birthday gift right there. The fact that I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
Still got eyebrows alive on my face. But my hair is wrapped up. I'll lab, you know, early Badu. And we got a lot of soul for y'all today.
Right? It really do, though.
Soulful episode for Colored Nerds. Ready for y'all today. Yeah, so, you know, we just been chilling. What you been up to? What you been up to, Eric? What's good? What's good? What's going?
I mean, I actually just been chilling. You know, I've been working, coming home, just, like, living life. Sadly, my mom just went home. She was staying with us for a month. It was amazing. Thank you, Mama. I miss you. You know what I'm saying? She was feeding. Like, she fed us basically every day.
What is that even?
Like, I haven't had Chipotle in a month. Do you understand that? I used to eat Chipotle every other day.
Chipotle is, that's your leg to stand on.
It's a staple. Like, it's like, right? Like, literally, in our home, it's a staple. Like, I haven't had Chipotle in a month. It's crazy. But, like, and I haven't missed it. I haven't missed it. Do you understand? Wow. Last night, in my refrigerator right now. You want to?
I'm ready.
I have fried chicken.
Oh, shit.
I have collard greens.
What?
I have hot water cornbread.
What?
I have a full pot of pinto beans.
Oh, my God.
I got some salmon cakes.
What?
You know, the fried, like, salmon.
I know salmon croquettes. Hello. We know we both from Louisiana.
Yeah, I got some salmon cakes. I got, what else did she cook? Some beef stew. Like, don't get it twisted. Mom left the fridge stacked.
See, I got to figure out, because, like, in order for me, the last time my mama really cooked a meal like that for me outside of a holiday, I moved away. And it was almost 4 years ago. That was the last time I was able to get a meal like that. And now I'm starting to realize I have to have a baby.
Yeah. I was so blessed. I feel like, every time she would cook, I feel like I got baptized by the blood of Jesus.
That's so deep.
That's real.
That's deep.
I can't even say that much more about it. But I'm, you know, shed a tear, pour one out. My mom is back at home in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to miss her, you know what I'm saying? Especially because now we have to take care of our kid full time.
Yeah. That do be the problem.
I'm a little sad about that.
Yeah. It's funny, I was talking to you, it was like 2 weeks ago, and you were like, yeah, well, you know, I got a lot more free time now. And I was like, because your mom's been here every day for the past month. But all right. I like the delusion that you're living in where magically, the baby's just taking care of herself. She's self-sufficient.
I mean, she basically is now. She can hold a bottle by herself.
Oh, my God.
Mom was teaching her things while we were gone.
I'm excited because she's coming to Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah. She's going
to be lit.
In my mind, she eats regular food. I was about to say, like, she's going to eat all your food, but she doesn't. She drinks breast milk.
Like, yeah, my baby is hungry.
Like, no,
I don't know. I was going to say, I was like, I think, I don't think baby infants like cornbread dressing.
It doesn't really work like that.
Yeah, no. So I'm chilling, you know. She's not about to, you know, I'm making apple pie this year. So pray.
But you can cook, though. I almost shaded you, but you can cook.
I actually can legitimately. And I made my first apple pie a couple weeks ago at apple picking and came back. I made some apple pie. It was delicious. The crust was a little raggedy, but, you know, live and learn.
Baby steps,
you know. What else can I tell? Oh, yes. Something I want to talk to you about before we get into the thing that we're going to get into before we talk about what we're going
to
talk
before
about.
Before we get to the thing, the thing?
Yeah,
the
before we get thing? To the thing before the thing. The shirt before the shirt. Jim Chan Laundry. But before we get to that, I just wanted to touch on the Chirac trailer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and actually somebody tweeted us about this.
Twitter user.
Felton Kaiser.
Felton Kaiser. Yeah. That's how I read it.
All right, but hit us up and was like, yo, have you seen this trailer? I sent it to you on Slack.
Yeah, you sent to me. I was like, I saw that you sent to me. I saw, what's that girl's name? Beautiful young woman.
Tiana Paris.
Tiana Paris. Good goddamn. So I saw her in the screen grab, and then I saw somebody else say Liz Estrada, and I was like, you know what? I'm not going to watch this today. I'm at work right now. And, you know, we really trying to grind
self-care.
This shit. Right, self-care. So I was like, I'm not going to sit here and just do that to myself. So yeah. I was like, but please, I want to hear your thoughts.
I mean, okay, look.
Oh, some background. Chirac is the new Spike Lee joint that's coming out.
That's kind of all you guys say.
That's all you guys say.
it's a Spike Lee joint. It's not like Inside Man where, you know, he
this
was
is
like
a Spike Lee film.
Like, this is a or like he like wrote is wrote and directed.
Yes.
And the trailer is a little rough. You know, but that said, I love Spike Lee. Like I love Spike
I
Lee. I will see all of them. I even like will like willingly forget about Miracle of St. Anna. Like it just didn't happen.
Miracle of St. Anna is actually better than She Hate Me to me.
No. Yeah. I love She Hate Me.
She Hate Me is
amazing.
Mess. That movie is a mess.
We should do an episode on She Hate Me. Straight up. I could talk about She Hate Me for like 3 hours.
Really? Because like I was going to be like, look, that made me afraid to date because I was like, is this really the shit that y'all be thinking about? Is this how you feel about yourself?
But just real quick, this man connected like whistleblowing in addition to, you know, selling your seed. Yeah. Like in addition to
about sperm. Erica's talking about semen.
Sorry. I mean, your seed.
I know. I'm just letting people know.
But yeah, in addition to it really like touched on, you know, the black male's perspective on what I guess they imagine lesbian relationships are like.
Again, not like, you know, like I give a fuck.
Not to say that it's any is accurate at all, but yeah, hey, he went there, you know, and he weaved a story that hit all those plot lines. There was like, you know, the father son relationship. There was like some intrigue. Like it was,
you know,
it's an excellent film.
Fine, right? So great. Sucker Free City was also weak as hell. And then there's everybody's least favorite. Fucking, actually, I forgot about the blood of Jesus.
The blood. I haven't seen that one.
Nobody
I won't lie,
really
I haven't seen that.
The blood of Jesus.
I heard it was wild.
I didn't see it because it was after Red Hook's. Not everyone's least favorite. Red Hook Summer. Yeah. After I saw Red Hook Summer, I was like, I don't know if I can rock with you.
That said, I have hope for Chirac. I really do. I really truly do. And I'm not dismayed by the trailer. Like, if you go back and watch, and actually I responded to Felton Kaiser on Twitter, and I was like, have you seen the She Hate Me trailer? Like, that trailer is
a mess.
Is a mess. And, the movie is so much better than the trailer. Like, even if you don't like the movie, the trailer is like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And this trailer is not that much better, but I have hope. I have hope that there is, you know, some redemption in the actual
Well,
film.
Weirdly enough, I was the whole time I was sitting there, and as much as I love Sam Jackson, I just went back and rewatched Die Hard with a Vengeance recently, which is like
It's amazing.
Best movie ever made. Like, watching it in 2015, when they say the wild shit.
Yeah.
That, like, when you hear Sam Jackson, I was like, Sam Jackson ain't never fucking lied. But Sam Jackson sometimes do be about a check. So I saw him in there, and I was like, all right. And, you know, he and Spike, they got that deep, they got the Morehouse connection. They got that deep, long-lasting, you know, creative relationship. So I was like, all right, cool. And I saw Nick Cannon, and I was like, all right.
Did you see Wesley Snipes, though?
I missed
with
Wesley.
With the eye patch?
That was Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes is back in a Spike Lee movie. I'm
there. That actually might get it. But when I saw Dave Chappelle, you know how I feel about Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, yeah.
Secretly, I saw him last month, which I did not tell almost any of my friends or family.
I knew that. I was real mad because you just told me, like, right before you went in. And I was like, oh.
Yep. Okay. No. So that's a secret. Now it's a cat out of the bag. I'm about to. It's a controversial statement I just gave right now. But I saw Dave Chappelle and I was like, all right, I'm going to show up. Because I don't know what it is. I respect the shout out Dave Chappelle. I would love to have any conversation with him about anything.
Yeah.
But I also would, if he proposed to me, which is unlikely, but if he proposed to me, I would marry him and go back to live on that farm in Ohio in a heartbeat. Mm. I feel that strongly about Dave Chappelle, just as his spirit as a person. Mm. So I was like, all right, I'm going to show up. But the thing about the plot is that it's about Lysistrata, which is like basically, you know, Greek. And these people are ancient Greek.
Basically, you know, Greek.
It's ancient Greece. And, you know, these people are fighting and killing each other and shit. And so, you know, in order to get the men to stop fighting, the women withhold sex.
But
let me tell you, the shout out to somebody who actually has never listened to the show, so they will never hear the shout out. To my younger
Tiffany?
Sister.
Yeah.
To my younger sister, Tiffany. Back when I was living with her and her friend Michael in 2010, when I was on my smooth 2 years of couch surfing, I moved from one couch to another couch, which was theirs, and we had the worst cable. It was like RCN. Shout out DC. Shout out RCN is actually the only cable that's slightly better than Optimum. So there you go. But they showed all the time, or maybe it was on Netflix. I can't remember. A Miami Tale. Tiffany said, my sister said that she was like, I don't know why everybody freaking out about Chirac like it's some new shit. She was like, really? Spike Lee is biting Trina in a Miami Tale.
Yeah.
And when she said that, I was like, wow, Tiffany, like that was a perspective. That was a hot take.
I mean,
that was some strong perspective.
Very accurate. Where's the lie?
And so it's kind of like, you know, this man, now, it makes you question, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's in, you know, he's in a meaty part of his career. Maybe he's not making the best stuff, but he's also at a point where he can experiment and still get money to do whatever the fuck he wants to do. So he's in a meaty part of his career. He's teaching at NYU Film School.
Doing it.
Biting Trina. And so.
But that's, I mean, if you're going to buy from somebody, I'll buy from Trina.
But it was very interesting, very deep that she said that, you know, I'm hoping one day she'll come on the show.
Mm-hmm.
She's been asking to come on the show. She's never heard it.
No.
She has no clue what the show's about.
No.
Nope.
Not going
to
happen.
No. She tells other people to listen to it. I'll give her that credit. She's never going to hear what I'm saying about her right now, which is hilarious. But yeah, it's a lot to think about when you unpack. So I would say anybody, before you see Chirac, I would say go back and watch A Miami Tale.
Yeah.
Excellent film. Excellent film. There's a character in the film who I'm probably dressed like today called Mama Africa. I've seen Miami Tale like 8 times.
What's great about a movie like Miami Tale is, just to set the stage real quick, all you're wearing is black jeans, you know, like a white tank top, and I guess what you call, like, I mean, for everybody, African print, quote unquote.
Yeah, this is just
like a head wrap. You got
fake
a head wrap.
Versace print from the thrift store, but yeah, it looks African.
And
it's on me.
That would make you Mama Africa.
Yep, exactly. All I need is like some wooden earrings in the shape of the continent that I bought on Fulton, and I'm set.
Yeah,
I'm done.
There you go.
But yeah, no. So that's so Chirac. I'm very curious to see what happens with that. That's why I did it last
night.
Also,
Tiana Paris is amazing, man.
Tiana Paris is gorgeous. Like, she's beautiful. She's talented.
Yeah.
I'm excited for her. And also Lala. I have so many thoughts about Lala.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta respect Lala's thespian game. Like, have you ever watched
she just
Power?
Just refer to Lala as a thespian. No, like, but I know this is gonna sound really prurient, but I've seen the screen grabs of her nude on Power. And actually,
are we going here today?
Somebody told me, someone, I'm not going to say who it is, but they know who they are. They told me to watch. And it's not even who you think it is.
I was about to say, I could guess.
It's one of my coworkers told me to watch Power.
Yo, Power.
Yeah, one of my coworkers told me to watch Power.
Power is amazing. Like, real talk, Power doesn't get the respect that it deserves because of Empire, but they're really nothing alike.
Yeah, I've heard Power hit its stride second season.
Amazing.
I've heard it's dope.
It's amazing. And Lala, I mean, you know, I'm not gonna comment on her news because that's somebody's wife and somebody's mama. But she's a gorgeous woman and a skilled actress.
See, that's patriarchy right there. But also, but I see why you're not commenting on the nudes. So,
you know what I'm saying? I'm just
gonna, you're gonna sidestep the controversy.
I'm just gonna sidestep. Yeah, I'm gonna stay out of
it. I got it.
But yeah, I mean, she's a beautiful woman, amazing actress. Yeah. She plays Natari Naughton's. Naughton? Is it Naughton?
Yeah,
Natari.
Natari.
Oh, man, you would think we've been drinking today.
We really haven't.
Amazingly
so. It's literally like 11, 12 a.m.
But yeah, she plays her best friend, and she's just good. She, you know, she's one of the reasons I come back.
I'm not afraid
to say that.
You know, I mean, I had a lot of thoughts about Lala. My sister, my younger sister, Tiffany, who's never listened to the show, she keeps me up to date.
Do you watch Full Court Life?
I know who Dice and Poe are.
Full Court. I watch everything. You already know.
You really watch everything. You stress me out right now.
Full Court Life is
yeah,
amazing.
I know all about her cousins, and I know she's a little clingy. I know that. But she also wrote a book about how to win at, like, business, and I was like,
oh. I mean, you know, she got
I'm sure
checks.
She got some hustles.
She got checks.
She got checks. No Trump checks.
She got more money than we do.
She got more money than Nene also. Yeah, no, Nene's rich, though. Actually reminds me when Teyana Taylor and Rihanna had that Twitter feud. And she was like, oh, Teyana Taylor. Everyone on Twitter was like, oh, Teyana Taylor got $500,000. And I'm like, I get it. But also, like, I've never seen $500,000 in one place.
Yeah.
In my life. Or in two places, split up in half or a quarter.
I don't even know what to type in on a calculator to get to $500,000.
No.
Like, I can't conceive. Mm-hmm. Today, what are we talking about today? Today, we're going to talk about a few things. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I think mainly we're going to talk about, you know, being black. Because we don't ever
surprise.
Talk about that. But, no, we're going to touch on Sammy Davis Jr., you know, talk about... kind of, I think, the double consciousness that black people go through.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get to Outkast.
Outkast.
Going to talk about Big Boy, Andre 3000.
Yeah,
and their,
Three Stacks.
And their commitment to the culture. You know what I'm saying? What they've done for everybody and black weirdos everywhere.
Everywhere.
When it comes to scents, you should pick ones that smell like, well, you. Target gets it, which is why they offer a range of personal care products with fragrances for everyone. Be true to floral you with Dove Peony and Rose Body Wash. Live your fresh life with Degree Ultra Clear Deodorant. Express your decadent side with Love Beauty and Planet Coconut Shampoo. This spring, choose care that brings you joy beyond labels. Pick up new favorites at a Target near you or online at Target.com.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Save big money at Menards. Get your garden ready with groundbreaking power equipment from Earthquake. Tillers are great for breaking up compact soil and killing weeds in your garden. Get maximum power in a compact frame with a Pioneer rear tine tiller. It features dual direction tines and self-propelled steel wheels. Hurry in for all of your lawn and garden needs and visit Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So let's get to it. You actually kicked us off.
No, you kicked us off.
I mean, I kicked it off a little bit.
You kicked it off. Erica sent us You sent us. You sent me.
I mean, I sent you.
I sent it like, but all of us, the collective audience. He sent me a great article from Pitchfork.
Yeah.
That was an Outkast retrospective. It was really fucking dope.
In this article, there's one longer essay by Jeff Weiss. Mm-hmm. And then they did a bunch of other essays that cataloged each of their albums, mm-hmm. like going all the way to even through like Idlewild, which everybody wants to forget.
Yeah. Morris Brown was not.
Morris Brown was really good. I even like Hollywood Divorce, to be real with you.
That's not wild. That's not
yeah.
wild.
But yeah, they go through each of their albums and talk about their contribution to the culture. Like Outkast, like they really grew, and this is something I think we'll touch on soon. They grew with hip hop. They grew mm-hmm. with people, and they grew as people, and it was a very like visible journey. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of talk about that, weaving their growth and their journey into popular culture as a whole. It was really good. And so I sent that to you.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, like, you know. It's been, I think at this point, it's been 10 years since Speakerbox Love Below.
Yeah, it is.
Which was amazing.
Amazing.
And so I sent that to you. And honestly, I didn't know if, I was like, this could be a really good,
yeah.
I think this could be a really good conversation. But I didn't know exactly how to approach it. And you sent this really good essay that was posted on Matter.
Flames. I got to give Laurent for the plug. He sent that yeah. to me first. Yeah, it was amazing.
Really, really good by Calvin Baker called Colorblind, A Pocket Guide to Race in America. And fuck.
This, so good.
this is really,
so good.
Really good.
Like, so good.
Damn.
I mean, like, I don't even know if I could even summarize it because it goes so many yeah. different places. It starts off with this anecdote where Calvin Baker, the guy who wrote it, I think he's talking to Gregory Hines at a party. He happens yeah. to be at a party and they're talking. And he tells, like, some story.
Which one? Can we just say?
Yeah, I mean, fucking peak. Peak.
Like, damn.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, RIP. Oh, God, I have so many feelings about Gregory Hines. But yes, he's at a party just talking to Gregory Hines, as one does.
Yeah.
And he like tells him some story about drugs or whatever, and he's like, "Why this thing?" He's like, "You know, why would you want to do that?" And he was like, "You know, because I wanted to go on a journey," which is like, like you know, that's yeah. like shit. That's a mic drop moment.
Yeah.
Because like when are Black people ever allowed that?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just to like
and to be able to talk about it.
Right.
Like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's not something that we're ever fucking allowed. Then like a few weeks later, he's like at dinner with like talking to this other like person. And this guy who was like a, who was it? Oh, Gerald Ely, who was then the head of African Studies at Washington University. So he was working at the time on a Sammy Davis Jr. reader, which is, it's a preposterous concept to me when I initially read this. Mm-hmm. Like, so I know that like, you know, this man was sitting there like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
what? So he was just kind of like, oh, okay, right, Sammy Davis Jr. reader. And then this guy said something that really stuck out to me, which obviously stuck out to the dude who wrote it, which is the guy said he was the first Black man in public life to demonstrate it was okay to go on a journey. When you think of Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, I mean, Sammy Davis Jr. was one of the earliest people who I can identify who was always extremely complicated.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. people's relationship with him is like super complicated. And we talk yeah. about like, you know, a complicated relationship with Blackness. Like Sammy Davis Jr. has always had a very complicated
yeah,
relationship
yeah, yeah.
to Blackness. You know, like from an immense amount of popularity, from
Converting to Judaism,
always seeming to exist as kind of portrayed as maybe a little bit of a token.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I would say that like that, I would say he's one of the, he's probably, I think he minted like, I think he probably
tokenism.
Minted the idea, yeah. Because it's one of those things, if you think about it, I think they talk about this in the piece. The dude's like, yeah, you like if you pull out, like, at the time, like, Sammy Davis Jr. was, like, doing some off-the-wall shit.
Yeah.
Like, if Amos and Andy before him, Step and Fetch It for him, you think about, like, a Butterfly McQueen or a Hattie McDaniel, like, yeah. he wasn't playing those roles. Like, he was, like, in the Rat Pack. Like,
yeah. he was playing in legitimate, Ocean's 11. You know, like, serious roles.
Yeah. Like, sure, he was a token, but that was a big shift at the time. And
yeah.
even the way that he lived his life, just kind of like, I'm going to try this, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to, you know, be in love with this person, and I'm going to, you know, before we recorded, Eric was telling me this wild-ass story of how he became friends with Richard Nixon.
Yeah, and the price he paid for that.
Yeah, he kind of like, he existed off script, off book.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he just was like, he was definitely doing his own thing before there was like a framework to understand that.
And I think that he paid the price of that a little bit, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
in terms of, you know, people started, especially as the civil rights movement kind of went on, like folks
yeah.
definitely looked at him and his contribution to like art and culture with a little bit of disdain.
Skepticism.
Yeah. Like, you know, folks, we started to resent his ability to be that token, his comfort in that. Being around the Rat Pack and, like, there always being kind of, like, a dubious relationship to race within that. Like, you know, in addition to, like you say, his relationship with Richard Nixon. Like, yo, Richard Nixon doesn't give a fuck about black folks. You know what I'm saying?
Like, no.
Like, let's be real. And that's putting it lightly, you know.
Yeah.
Kicked off the drug war. Like,
it's, literally.
Let's talk about it. But
we in it.
Yeah. For him to be, to willingly embrace Richard Nixon, like, he paid a significant price with that, and his career took a big hit. Like, folks didn't really fuck with him until he came back around, like, towards, I would say, like, probably like late 70s and 80s.
You know, we about to die.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't imagine how difficult something like that is. Like, to, you know, to be yourself and realize that the probably the change, to be advocating for some degree of change within your own life and within your own art and your own career.
Yeah.
And to have the people who you, you know, care most about experience that in, you know, in ways that have, like, love and ways that have, like, extreme vitriol. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I can't picture that. And that's got to be extremely tough.
Mm-hmm.
You take what's offered to you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your relationship with your career is defined through whiteness to a degree.
To a degree?
Yeah.
To a degree?
Yeah. And, I mean, interestingly enough, this brings up, like, kind of one of the key points that, that Calvin Baker touched on. He kind of brought back this idea of, like, the double consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that was coined by W.E.B. Du Bois. And it talks about just looking at, you look at yourself through the lens of your own race, and black people look at themselves through blackness. But then also they have to look at themselves as being black in relationship to being white.
Absolutely.
So you know, you're thinking about yourself in this in two ways that white people don't really have to do.
No.
And that's gotta be really difficult. And then we were talking about how even he's, like, grown as a person, he's getting, like, real big, starts dating Kim Novak.
Kim Novak, who's, you know, a Hitchcock blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, so they had this, like, deep-ass relationship to the point where, like, even, like to see each other, she was, like, laying down in her limousine. Like, it was, the shit was super fucking, like, you talk about, like, clandestine affair. Like, it was fucking lit. And they were, like, really in love and shit. And, like, you know, he wanted to get married.
Yeah, but.
That shit wasn't
and
gonna
a big
fly.
But. You know, the head of Kim Novak's studio at the time, because people were signing to studios back then, was like, nah, son. Like,
you're not doing that.
No, it's not going down like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not, this black man is about to marry this white woman who is about to make me all this money.
Yeah, nah.
So they straight kidnapped him.
Yep.
For, like, I think, like, a couple of days or some hours or some shit. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and they were like, so what you not going to do?
Is marry this white woman.
Nah.
And what you're about to do right now.
Is find any old black woman.
And get married to her.
Yep.
So, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. wasn't no small-time dude at this point.
No.
You know what I'm saying? But, to, like, imagine being at that level and then being just, like, snatched, you know, back to, I hate to say, like, your place, but them, like, looking at you and putting you back in this position where you realize you have very little power. You have to kind of follow a very specific mold.
So the shit back then, I mean, that's, like, that's a real, like, I can't, like, it's unconscionable to me on a certain level. Like, it's totally logical, but it's also, like, thinking about what that looks like, what that must have felt like, what that must have been like is wild.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, it also just to go back, like, he had to really, like, he had to focus on living his life a very specific way.
Yeah.
You know, and that puts a lot of who he was publicly in perspective. You know, he was still a very different dude, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he, you know, consistently had the conk, you know, like...
Yeah.
He was a very different dude in how he expressed himself.
Yeah.
But even still, you can tell that, like, he clearly had some extreme boundaries. And I think Calvin Baker did an excellent job of kind of framing that. You know, he was talking about how actually he said that white people want affirmation that the inner life of black folks is more or less the way black folks exist in the white imagination.
Yeah.
And, like, shit.
You know what's funny is that, like, that makes me even think about the last episode that we did.
Yeah.
Dear White People. I think it was episode 31 or 32, where, you know, in the last episode we were explaining to this white couple that reached out to us, like, about wanted advice on moving to the hood as a means of progressing integration as a, you know, again, as a means of, like, you know, helping to end racism and then police brutality by extension. It was real confusing. It was kind of messy. It was interesting. You should go back and listen to it.
We had feels.
Yeah, we had feels. This shit was wild. But, yeah, but, like, it, like we talked about, like, how white people ask us questions and want us to give them the answers that they want to hear. And, like, in our art, white people want to hear, like, they're only interested in our, like, the inner workings of our minds, and they're only interested in our creative lives as long as it reflects how they believe us to be, you know, in their imaginations, which is six or seven different levels of wild.
Frustrating at the least, you know, infuriating, you know, at best.
At best, exactly. And, like, it's interesting to, like, you know, when we talk about a Sammy Davis Jr. or Gregory Hines or even Nina Simone, as we talked about before, these people, given the constraints that they had at the time, like, did so much to, like, live, like, to kind of chart their own course and to live outside of, you know, what a lot of people felt like they should be doing and how people felt like they should be living. I think that's so fucking major. And that's, like, so when I read that, I kind of, like, I'd read the Outkast piece, but it was, like, in the back of my mind. I didn't know what to do with it yet. So when I read the Calvin Baker piece from Matter, I was just like, fuck. Like, there's this phrase, like, it's popular on Tumblr. It's popular in Brooklyn. Probably popular other places, like being a black weirdo.
Yeah,
I think it actually might have been popularized by The Satisfaction. I guess now, if I had to just, like, give you a quick image of, like, what a black weirdo is, just, like, think of Afropunk. Just think of the, like the people, like, the general swath of people who show up. And it's just kind of, like, being black, being okay with your weirdness, and letting those things, like, two things, like, coexist. So, like, I, like, sort of thought about, like, okay, so kind of in a way, like, he's kind of saying that Sammy Davis Jr. is, like, one of the original, like, black weirdos. Like, he was kind of just doing him.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of just, like, you know,
as much as he could.
As much as he
within
could.
Within the space that was available to him.
Exactly.
Like, people forget, like, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. was popular, like, in the 50s and 60s. Like, this is not, this is not 2002. You know what I'm saying? Like, you just can't. There wasn't the space available to him to be as black as he wanted to be. And, you know, and even to be, it was clear that he was likely afraid, considering all the things that have happened to him in his life, to be that.
Yeah.
You know, to be who he, to be the full expression of himself.
Yeah, and he still got pretty fucking weird. So, like I thought about, like, Sammy Davis Jr. as, like, one of the, as an early black weirdo.
Yeah.
And then, like, it got me thinking, all right, like, so, like, I get, like, there's this whole Tumblr aesthetic around, like, being a black weirdo, and it looks like Afropunk, and being a carefree black person, and that looks like mixed people with, you know, flower crowns. And
fields
with sunflowers. And you know what? And someday,
someday
we going to have an episode where I'm going to sit down with the black folks at Tumblr and be like, y'all's fixation with mixed people, got to stop. But that's going to be another day. It's not going to be today. But I see that, like, there's probably kids who are, like, 16, 17, 21, who are, like, deep in this black weirdo, carefree black person, art ho movement, all this kind of stuff. And, like, their aesthetic is very specific. But when I think about, and granted, I'm not old. I will be 28 in, like, a week. But when I think about, like, what I grew up with as far as, like, who did I look up to when I was growing up, who kind of, like, allowed me to see that there was, like, being black could be a multitude of things.
Yeah.
First name that came to mind was Outkast.
And I would say they're one of the first groups of our generation that really pushed the boundaries of, like, what you had to do to appreciate them. Like, the music itself was amazing, you know, don't get it twisted. But you had to really, like, sit with it. It's thick. Like, it's really, really thick. You have to move past, even being black, you have to move past certain things to really say, like, yo, this is really good. This is interesting. This is different. Like, appreciating that at the time that they were out, like, at the time that they came out, how revolutionary that was. Is, like, it's crazy. Like you said, like, making space for you to feel comfortable being different.
Yeah.
You know, like, their journey, like, even getting to being who we, like, when we think of Outkast classically.
Yeah.
Is just so, like, it's so interesting in itself.
And also, like, I mean, and it's wild, too, because it is, at the end, like you say, journey, like, there are two black men from the hood in Atlanta who publicly have gone on, like, at this point, like a 20-year, like, musical, like journey of a musical career and, like, of a creative partnership and of, like, a friendship and of, like, a dialogue on what it means to be black in America, like, with their audience.
Yeah.
And that's, like, some really, that's some real deep shit.
So, like, OutKast was able to exist in this space, like, where they were able to talk about the trap from being within it.
Yeah.
But then also could take that step back and critique it and talk about its place in the world and how they thought about life outside of it.
Oh.
Does that make sense? I don't know.
No, it kind of reminds me. It kind of reminds me of, like, the double consciousness in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, they, you know, they were... They looked at themselves and their culture from, like, these, again, these two viewpoints. Like, they, you know, part of it was, you know, like, hood or street. And the other part was, you know, many things. Like, it's tough to actually put one word on it. But a part of it was weird. A part of it was, like, conscious. A part of it was, like, futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
But it was always two things at once. And that's something that's pretty unique. And that, especially... looking at the gap before them, like, you know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Hip-hop was in a very specific place.
Very specific place. Like, even, like, the beginning of the Pitchfork article, like, starts with the 1995 Source Awards.
Yeah.
And how I think what they won for Best New Rap Group. Yeah. And, like, Suge Knight was not pleased. And that's... You never want to be in that position.
Yeah.
As a human being, being having Suge Knight feeling anything toward you.
That's
but, yeah.
it. He was rarely known as a happy man.
This is very true. But I mean, like, 1995, you think about that year in hip hop, and it's like, you know, I mean, the first thing that you think of is, like, East Coast, West Coast. Do you know what I'm saying? And, like now Southern rap is like, in a part of, like, the larger hip hop conversation is, like, it's a mainstay. It's been that way for, I think, a little over a decade. Like, Southern rap is a thing. I hate to say it, actually.
It would arguably be more, like, I would say now, you know, maybe now, like, West Coast rap is probably having a huge resurgence, but Southern rap dominated.
Oh my God.
Like, hip hop for the past, like, probably like 10 years.
I was gonna say, I hate to even put it like this, but, like, this is weird, but, like, I actually think that when Diddy started Bad Boy South and put Young Jock on, that actually, like, I think, like, somebody from the North coming down and putting money and kind of just, like, being like, all right, this is what it is. Because if you think about it, like, they came from Atlanta, but, like, if you think about, like, they're from Atlanta and they managed to reach a wider audience. They were, like, the first, I would say, like, major Southern, like, rap group, like, or, like, really artists to reach, like, a wider audience. But, like, you think about shit like Slip and Slide was down in Florida. Like, they were in their own little thing. Everybody, like, you know, Weezy and everybody in Louisiana and New Orleans were doing
before
their own
them,
specific
rap
thing.
A lot.
Houston, do you know what I'm saying? Like, UGK doing their own specific thing.
Memphis too.
Yes, Memphis. Oh, hey. I would never leave Gangsta Boo out of any conversation, nor Crunchy Black. You know, even shit like David Banner.
Yeah.
For the longest time, like, there are some people who don't fuck with his early music. To that I say, I don't have anything to say to you. But there's people who don't like his early music. But if you think about, like, David Banner, like, because he was in the South, he had to learn how to produce and make his own beats, being from Mississippi, because nobody would make beats for people in the South. So, like, the fact that OutKast was able to, like, come up in this moment where, like, it wasn't just East Coast, West Coast was dominating aesthetically, but, like, that battle was, like, a cultural fucking moment. Like, we were deep in the clutches of that shit, and somehow OutKast was able to come out of Atlanta weird as fuck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Weird as fuck. Like, that's a Hail Mary pass. Like, I mean, that's, like, a long shot.
The cool thing about OutKast is it's not just how they looked. It really was the music, too. Like, if you go back and listen to every single album, but specifically, they started to take a real deep turn, like, with, like, AT Aliens. Like, Elevators, like, nothing really sounds like that. And then once Equimini hit, like, I remember... Shit. The Art of Storytelling, Number Two.
Like, Sasha Thumper.
Well, no, that's one.
That's one?
That's one. Art of Storytelling Two.
Oh,
maybe
Jesus.
That's the one that sounds like the world is about to fucking blow up.
Yes.
Like, you hear the clock ticking in the back. But I just remember, like you listen to something like that and it feels like your mind is stretching to accommodate it. Like,
well, the crazy thing is that they had also like the aesthetics of their music, right, was so, like, from another planet. But then, like, a lot of the shit that they were rapping about was just regular, everyday shit.
Rooted in, like, it was rooted in stuff that we all know.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of, like, of their popularity. Is because, like, no matter, like, how weird they got, you know, like, it was still familiar.
Yes. Absolutely. It was recognizable.
You know, and especially to Black people. You know, like, you knew the way they pronounced words. Like, even though it sounded really different, like, you could just feel the Blackness in what they said.
You want to talk about Black-ass albums, like...
All of them?
Literally all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought about them as being like that. Like, because, you know, we just had the Kendrick conversation.
Yeah.
And I was at brunch a few months ago talking about, I think it was a UGK album. I think it was... I've been writing dirty. So it was a UGK album, and then also Drake's If You're Not Home
reading
By Now,
too.
Whatever the fuck it says. I don't know.
If you're reading this, it's too late.
Yeah, if you're reading this, it's too late. Whatever. Nothing Was the Same. What a Time to Be Alive. It's all the same shit. So, yeah, like one of the things that we had talked about was like how when you listen to UGK, when you listen to Drake was always talking about the six. But I didn't really get any sort of, I couldn't get any feeling of what Toronto was like.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably fine. But like when you listen to UGK, I remember we listened to that shit, we were down in Houston for Jason's wedding. It's like when you're down there, you're like, oh, fuck. Like this is like you hear it, you feel Houston.
They paint. Like, and that's the thing I think about Southern rap specifically. There's so much texture. Like, they really, you know, Southern rappers, like, paint the picture. Outkast specifically. Like, you know the cars you're going to see.
Yeah.
You know what color they're going to be.
Oh, yeah.
You know what the interior looks
you
like.
You know how slow they're driving. You know where people are parked. But to go back to my point about being able to, like, provide a sense of place.
Yeah.
One of the things, like, we talked about Kendrick's album, and now this is just, like, something to think about now, and how Black it was, but, like, it's because every single fucking song was, like, nigga, 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 bliggity, black, 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 my dick this, my dick that, slavery, Uncle Sam, Uncle Tom, N-E-G-U-S, right? So, like, yeah, it was a super Black album, and yeah, he had George Clinton and all this stuff, and it was, you know, we talked about before, another episode, King Kunta, number 17. But I actually, like, I think about Outkast, and now that you kind of mention it, like, they didn't have to say any of that shit, but their music is some of the blackest shit you will ever hear.
Stankonia is the name of the album.
Like, that's a real thing that happened.
Yeah.
And that album cover.
Yeah. Like,
Blaxploitation, fuck it. No, I'm thinking of...
Aquemini.
Yeah. But even still, Stankonia, he had the Mary J. Blige little flip-out wig. You know what I'm saying?
Homeboy like had to. Would it be a flip out? Nah, I don't think that was a wig.
No.
I think that was his hair.
And you're right.
I look at that more like a blowout almost. Like it was just. I remember it being very feathery.
I'll put it to you like this. I'm about to look. I'm looking up the picture right now so I can see. It is his hair, and I don't know because I'm gonna tell you what, he's got the wrap on top that's covering his edges. So
you never know.
You never know. Yeah. You never know. That's a pro tip for those of y'all who don't know. The edges are covered up. You don't know, because it's dicey. But, yeah, what's blacker than a fresh press?
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
And it's interesting that you say that, but there were pieces of that, like, Kendrick expression of, expression of blackness, like he coined it, you know?
No,
but
I did, but okay, yeah.
But Outkast went there, but it was within, like, it was one piece of a much larger, like, conversation. And it was one that they felt was clearly important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were other things that they wanted to talk about that you needed to know.
Yeah.
And their ability to package that in ways that obscured it to a degree that made you familiar. Like, you got familiar with it, and then you discovered what they were talking about.
Exactly.
And that is, like, that's a amazing ability. I don't know that I would necessarily say it's better or worse. You know, I don't look at it like that, but to be able to dive into their work like that was really just like I said before, it stretches your mind to a degree because you're in it and you're rocking with it quick, and then you're like, wait, wait, what are they saying?
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know,
like, damn, this is really deep. Like, this is really talking about some real shit. And like, I don't know who else was really doing that.
No. And especially to the,
in
like,
that way.
To also, like, when you also add on top of it, like, the lyrical dexterity and the, yeah, like, the level of poetry that exists in their lyrics, like, that's some real fucking shit. I don't know that there was anybody who was, and we talked about this, I think, before we started recording, but, like, there are very few other, there are very few other people, and I don't know if there's even any one group or artist that has been that successful for that long, being that weird, that critically acclaimed on a consistent basis. Like, on yeah, top of it, like, was extremely fucking talented and, like, had the ability to talk about real shit and also had the ability to make, like, kind of just, like, whatever. Like, Hey Ya is a yeah, cute song. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a cute, it's a cute song.
And interesting enough, there was actually, we'll link this, but L.A. Reid was on Rap Radar.
Oh,
the Rap Radar
yeah,
podcast,
yeah,
which is really good.
Yes.
Elliot
Shout
Wilson,
Elliot Wilson. Yeah.
So that episode, one, that episode was fucking amazing. You got
I have to
Elliot.
Go back and listen. Because, you know, I have feelings about Elliot Reid.
Well, I mean, one.
Because I also have feelings about Babyface. I have opinions.
Well, I mean, if you think about one, Outkast is LaFace.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, connection. His interpretation of why Andre 3000 kind of left mm-hmm, the game, like, walked away.
Ooh, same
and didn't
one,
want to come back. But one of the things he kind of hinted towards was, like, with music like Hey Ya, you know, and the thing that they kind of talked about, like, looking back, that particular piece of music, it was so forward,
uh-huh,
you know, in the fact that it, like, the bar was now set really high in terms yeah, of what you have to produce after that.
Yeah.
But I don't know that Andre 3000 was as, like, he didn't want to continue to make that type of music.
Yeah. You mean, like, music that was, like, that happened to also be very popular?
Yeah. And even sound like that. Like,
yeah,
you know, and that's a part of their, like, also going back to this journey, this idea of a creative journey and that they were taking. Like, their music was clearly evolving in certain directions. And at a certain point, it becomes so popular that people expect the same type of thing.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
And your ability to give them something different, there are now boundaries. Because people are now expecting
they
a
want
certain
this,
thing.
They want you to hit this mark.
Yeah, because you're so big, you're so popular, it's everywhere that mm-hmm, you now need to produce something that everyone can appreciate.
Yeah.
And I don't know that Andre 3000 was really interested in that.
You know what, though? Like, that, I mean, like, that makes a lot of sense. There's a lot, I mean, you think about what we talked about, like, Lauryn Hill before. Do
yeah,
you know what I mean? And that's a very, like, I could, I mean, now let's be real. She had a lot of other stuff going on. You know, Andre 3000 yeah, kind of been laying low, drinking tea.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Making sweaters and whatever the fuck he does.
Yeah,
and
dropping a mean 16 every now and again.
Yeah, every now and again. Whenever he gets a guest on somebody else's song, goddamn. Like, you know, who amongst us has not cried tears while listening to Pink Matter? But yeah, but I mean, you know, Lauryn has some other stuff going on. But yeah, I could see how she was in a similar position where you make something at that level, but it, where it's very you, it's very good, but it also, like, to the point where it's so huge that it's changed what everybody else in the industry is doing and caring about. And people want you to hit that exact same point. They want you to, like, make that exact, they want to be made to feel the exact same way by something that you create. And it's like, when I would guess, in both of their position, they did not set out to make something for anybody else.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you have that shift in expectations on such a large scale, like, that's a lot of fucking pressure. I probably would quit. Nah, I hate to put it that way. But I'd probably be faced with the same, like, especially being young.
Yeah.
I could see how that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I mean, you're still growing. Like, he's clearly, you know, constantly been looking, been involving, like, who he wants to, how he wants to present. You know, and now to have that much focus on it and, like, it be this thing, like, I don't know that it was
oh
as much.
Gosh. He's just 40 now. He's
yeah,
he's like 29. 30.
I mean, both
he's
of
like,
them
they're
are
like our age
young.
When they. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, you know, you're still trying to figure out who you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, you have to sell that in a way that you didn't before.
Well, you know what else, too? That's also a little bit, it's a little shade of, like, because what Lauren was like 25 or 26 when that show was happening, maybe even younger, and like makes me think also of like Dave Chappelle, who we haven't necessarily gone in too deep into that before, but I think there's something there we could definitely talk about like further down the line. But like, you know, I went back and rewatched like the, I think the episode of Oprah where after he quit Chappelle's show, and then like I watched, you know, the Iconoclast or whatever episode or whatever on IFC with him and Maya Angelou, which is on YouTube if you haven't seen it. But where you, like, I was thinking, like, okay, like, I get where he was coming from as far as he felt like he was making something where, like, he, I think, like, actually, like, of the three people that we've mentioned, like, where Andre 3000 and Lauryn Hill kind of got to a certain point and they were like, I don't know, is this for me or is this for other people? They, like, stopped because he obviously was in a different discipline. Yeah. Television works differently than record deals and stuff like that. Like, if you got a season, the season got to come out. Your album can kind of push back the release date. TV, can't do that shit. Yeah. So they gave him, like, you know, the $30 million or whatever, and so he's like, all right, I got to do this. But, like, I remember thinking, like, when I was, like, you know, 17, like, why the fuck would you walk away from that? And now as an adult, like, I'm realizing he was only, like, 31 years old.
Yeah.
And to be, like, I think about, you know, obviously we're not making the Chappelle Show or, you know, the Love Below.
I would like to think we make an important contribution to the culture.
Right, exactly, right. But I could also see, like, let's say that we did make a ton of money from this.
Yeah.
And then, like, somebody swooped in and was just like, okay, so you guys are doing great. We just need you to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to give you these checks. And it's like, on one level, you're like, well, yeah. But then also, like, you kind of like, what's about to change? Like, what does that mean? Like, I could definitely see, like being like, because I still, you know, I still, like, you know, you got a kid and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, I think you would agree that I feel pretty young.
Yeah.
And I kind of, like, feel like I maybe wouldn't know what to do in that position. I could see, like, because, hey, like, we just talked about the blackness of Outkast, right?
Yeah.
Outkast was not known, really, to white people in a real way until, like, a decade ago when Speaker Box and The Love Below came out.
Yeah.
And, like, I could definitely see how that, like, how that...
It's jarring.
It's jarring.
Like, yeah, it totally makes sense on why he would need to step away. But and the thing that also sucks about... I wouldn't say it sucks. But the interesting thing about this conversation, now that I think about it as well, like as we're having it, I also think about Big Boy's relationship and all this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's always so much focus on like when is Andre 3000 gonna come back? Like, you know, around the time of their
Meanwhile.
Like, Big Boy been sick with it for a long time. Ain't stopped.
Big Boy has not released a bad album in his life.
Yeah.
In his life.
Like shit. No one really talked, like, even on Speaker Box, Love Below.
People don't give Speaker Box the credit.
People do not give Speaker Box the credit. Like, it's got...
I mean, first of all, I'm pretty sure it has The Way You Move.
The Way You Move
Which,
is on there.
Like, whose parents don't love that song? Whose parents
that's
don't love that
shade.
Song?
That's almost shade. But no, that's real. Like,
But that's real shit. That, to me, that's a high compliment. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, yeah.
If
no,
to get if you made a hip hop song in 2005, and my fucking 50-year-old parents are like, oh, shit.
But even like even if you think about how it sounds like now, like that type of like he was able to weave funk, like, you know what I'm saying, like traditional like hip hop bass and then like that kind of almost these syncopated rhythms that were like just going crazy that didn't sound like anything else and was spitting on that
church.
Yeah, like, it was really, like, ghetto music
oh
is
my.
Crazy. Like, you can't even
so good.
Talk the music,
that song
that
is so
song.
Good. No, you can't.
Like.
You can't.
It is, like, it's ridiculous. Like, no one was really doing that, and it kind of got overshadowed, like, with, it definitely got overshadowed within the conversation about, like, oh, man, this is their last album. It's a double album.
Yeah.
Then how far left The Love Below went. It sucks that this got left out.
But you know what, though? There's some deep shit in that. I don't follow music that deep, if I'm really being honest.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to get kicked out of several different social groups that were saying that, but I don't follow music that deep. I got fucking podcasts to make and shit like that. And you know what I'm saying? I got people to text. You know what I'm saying? I have food to cook. But, like, I like to read music criticism a lot, and something that, like, drives me fucking crazy, and there's a million places we could go in this conversation, but I'm going to focus on this specifically, is like the whole rockist point of view. Mm. And I can't remember who coined the term, but like rockism basically is like this idea that like the more, and it's so fucking fucking flawed in general, like, just to begin with, just because like rock is like asserting that like music, like white music is better, rock is better.
Yeah.
The weirder, the quote unquote weirder something is, the less hood, street, black it is, like the more legitimate it is.
Yeah.
And I think that like when you're looking at Outkast through a white lens, Andre 3000 is going to be your obvious pick for who is the better artist, who's more influential. So I think that like once they really started to get the mainstream critical acclaim, I think that just because of how racist like music criticism is,
yeah,
on so many fucking different levels, Andre 3000 got a lot more of the credit and he got a lot more of the attention, even though Andre like Big Boi is fucking super fucking talented.
Yeah.
And they are and have always been very tight creative partners.
Yeah.
And there's no way really for one to exist without the other.
Most of the hooks, you know what I'm saying, like this is something that I've read or and also heard in like a few different places, but it's also just true. Like most of the hooks that we know and sing, like Rosa Parks, you know, and Elevators, were all like written by Big Boi.
Yeah.
You know, and were all like written and sung or rapped by Big Boi.
Yeah.
He was just as influential in advancing how, like, I think futuristic their music sounded.
Yeah.
And how adding so much texture to it as Andre 3000 was. And it's and I agree, like Andre 3000's like three stacks, his three stacks' expression of who he was definitely sometimes overshadowed that, while the music itself,
yeah,
was equal.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly. And that was actually, like, and that also, like, we talked a little bit earlier about, like, how, like, even though Andre got a lot of the credit, like, still on some level, you have to give the man credit for being a black man from the hood,
yeah,
a straight black man from the hood of Atlanta, wearing a pink wig, you know what I'm saying,
yeah,
and fucking pantaloons, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, bloomers and shit,
yeah,
no top, cummerbund, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just doing this shit and being like, it's cool. But like that, like, so that is already a level of like weirdness that I have so much of an appreciation for. But also, like, I love how their partnership and how like Big Boi's relationship with and to Andre 3000, like, completely was just like, this is fine. Like,
yeah,
this is like,
what's
this is
different.
What's different? This is what we do.
Yeah.
Like
that, I mean, honestly, that was huge. You know, that was huge for me. Like, I mean, obviously, I was a very different level of weird.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was weird in terms of, like, you know, wearing, like, sweater vests and, like, that.
You're a little bit more of a Roger from Sister Sister
yeah,
level. Yes.
But, you know what I'm saying? Like, where I grew up and where I went to school, like, I had, you know, I have friends who are a lot better at expressing, like, their hoodness.
And you are from the South, too. You have to mention.
Yeah. Than I was. And I was always, you know, there's always this nervousness. There's always this, like, you know, growing up, you're always wondering how people are going to accept you,
mm-hmm,
you know, and you want to be accepted. You want to be accepted by your friends. You want to be accepted by, feel like you have a place in blackness, even if it, you know, sometimes feels as though your expression of that blackness doesn't, like, look normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so their relationship brought me a huge degree of comfort. It's like, yo, if Big Boi are like still so cool and,
yeah,
like, you know, still able to produce this, like, this work, like, if they showcase this range, like, so clearly,
yeah,
like, I'm in there somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not on, like, like the cool side, but like I exist in that range on some level.
Yeah.
And I think, again, going back to why, like, people can identify with them, because they showcase this, like, massive range.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody sees themselves in there somewhere. Sometimes you feel like a, you know, sometimes you feel like Andre 3000.
Yeah.
Sometimes
tonight I'm going to be feeling like Big Boi.
Yeah.
I know that.
Right? But, yeah, I mean, I think what they showcased about what it meant to be black from the hood and, like, produce art.
Yeah.
Was really crazy. And it, you know what I'm saying, it really opened up a lot of different avenues. Like, if you look at what comes out of Atlanta now.
Go ahead, keep talking.
You know, if you look at what comes out of Atlanta now,
yeah,
like, how the fuck is that possible? How do you have that range without,
yeah,
Outkast? You don't.
You don't.
You don't get a McConan.
No, you don't get a McConan.
Father.
And,
like,
yeah, a father, and also like a Donald Glover.
Yeah.
And then also like Jeezy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't get all of these things. But that's like one of the coolest things. Like, Outkast, I've always had this fascination with Atlanta. My aunt used to live there. I think she moved to North Carolina like 10 years ago. So I used to travel there a fair amount, but I never got to really spend time there and really understand Atlanta. One of the things that blew my mind when I went to Howard, first of all, 75% of Howard is from Atlanta. Yeah, do you know what I'm saying? Everybody is from Atlanta, yeah, to some degree. But people from Atlanta, and even as like I like grow up and I meet other like Black adults, like who are from Atlanta, like they are like the weirdest, dopest people, and it's like I feel like. Like Atlanta had to have some like just weirdness in general, just like at its base to produce Outkast.
Yeah.
And then like Outkast like just like cycled all of their weirdness back into Atlanta. And like they've always lifted up Atlanta, just like, you know what I'm saying? Like just,
yeah,
just so seriously. But like, I feel like there's like I feel like Outkast has to do with the reason why just not even rappers, but like people from Atlanta have, like, you know, because obviously, like, on some level, you know, they've got, like, the historical, the civil rights. Like, there's a lot popping off. And it's just a great place for Black folks to live in general if you have a family.
Yeah.
Like, there's that. But then there's also, like, this weird, like, how do I put it? Like, there's this, like, really specific, I feel like, comfort in, like, your identity as a Black person that people in it, like, that I feel like I had to really, like, work for and earn, like, yeah, as a young adult, that I feel like a lot of Black folks from Atlanta just kind of, like, showed up with. Like, they kind of came into it.
Well, even if you go into music, like, Atlanta has always been known for, like, straight up creating sounds, mm-hmm, and, like, a very big range of sounds. Like, you think about, like, to take it back, like, LaFace, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, LaFace had a very specific sound in terms of its expression of R&B that was, yeah, super different. Then you go into, like, So Def. Like,
so true.
You know, like, that was a very, like, specific type of sound. And then you go with Outkast, and then you go with, you know, T.I.
And, yeah, like, and then also we can't forget, obviously, Dungeon Family.
Yeah, Dungeon Outkast, Family as a, yeah, whole. Like, you,
yeah,
know what I'm saying?
I mean, CeeLo.
Like,
a lot of people
CeeLo,
don't know.
Big Gip, like.
Weird to me that people don't know that CeeLo's from Dungeon Family. Future? your boy Future, like, yeah,
it's just, you know, they have always had that range, and because I think you have that range, because it's always been this like Black cultural mecca, like, I do imagine that it has to be easier to a certain degree to feel very different, yeah, because there's always been,
yeah,
you know, like, you know, maybe not these particular expressions of different,
yeah,
you know. But post Outkast, like, it's like, oh,
do what you want.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Doors wide open.
Yeah.
Like, and that's really great. And I don't think that the importance of that could be understated.
No.
But I mean, the thing that I do think we should point out, though, is that there are other artists who really did a great job of expressing that.
Yes.
Like, that, like, Black weirdo and all mentality, and also like pushing the boundaries of, like,
yeah,
what we think about in,
yeah,
terms of Blackness. And you call one out.
Missy, obviously. Missy. Obviously. We need your girl come back.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here waiting on you to come
waiting.
Back. I'm
I think
ready.
She is working on the album, though.
I know. I stay abreast. My friend, my dear friend Jordan, back in Michigan, he has been waiting for Missy's next album to come out every day for the past 10 years. And he's like, this is our year. Missy gonna do it next year. 2017, Missy gonna do it. I'm ready.
For a long time, Busta was like that too.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about his videos,
all of his partnerships with fucking Hype Williams and all,
yeah,
that shit was
like,
wild.
He was always really like expanding those boundaries. Also, to a certain degree, Wu-Tang. Like,
I was gonna say the same thing.
Wu-Tang was always
super
on
weird.
Some other shit.
Yeah. Because, like, if you think about it, like, I mean, Ghostface is weird to a certain degree. Redman is super,
yeah,
weird.
They're all very different, like. You know, like, you talk about Raekwon, like, listening,
yes,
to Raekwon talk is just like...
It's a different type of experience for the ear. It's a different oral experience, yes.
Yeah, like, I mean, you just have... There have always been, you know, these people within hip-hop, I think, who have subtly expanded how we look at it.
Yeah.
I just do think Outkast has done that to such a... Maybe the... the highest degree.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's like the lifeblood of like who they are. It's like the lifeblood of their partnership. Additionally, like they like they've also like to bring it back to the journey metaphor we've been hammering into the ground, but like they've been in this partnership, just two people together releasing like they've never made a bad album, really. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because even Idlewild, you can call it bad, but like it went with a movie that was such a huge, awesome thing that they did. Do you know what I'm saying?
And like, folks shit on Idlewild. Idlewild's actually not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. And also, like in hindsight, like that was a really cool thing to do to make there are very few period films about black people that aren't explicitly about racism, and I think that like that's one. And Eve's Bayou is one, and I can't really think of too many more at all.
It's kind of hard.
Yeah, exactly. So like the fact that they did that like in like, you know, 2008 or something like that, and really like, you know, like committed to like bringing forth this new. It's just a different visual, like a different film aesthetic of like what blackness could look like. Like that's a real cool thing. The fact that they made music to go along with that was experimental and that they tried to like make the shit work together.
Yeah.
I respect them for that shit. But like they have like also been allowed to like grow and change.
Yeah.
And they've grown and changed like together. Like they actually never separate. And like, you know, Andre went through the phase where he was like, you know, 3000, excuse me, went through the phase where he was wearing the Rory hats.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And Rory wears the Rory hats because Andre wore them. So he has a little straw, a little Huckleberry Finn shit going.
Yeah.
With his little college sweaters and is making the jeans and all that kind of stuff. Like they are allowed to go through different iterations visually and aesthetically and sonically and separately and together. But like who Outkast is, like that still remains constant and like alive and like real. And I don't think that there's really anybody else in hip hop, or really like making black art on a huge popular scale like that, who's been that consistent.
Yeah,
I don't think there's anybody who's been that consistent, been that strong, been that long.
No, I completely agree. Like I was reading this thing, and I think this kind of sums it up really well. But in the retrospective from Pitchfork, they said, we routinely celebrate the contradictions of artists as a badge of complexity. But Outkast was the rarity, able to reconcile commerce, human decency, and purity of vision. Like Outkast really,
damn,
they brought everything all together and gave you that shit packaged how you've never heard it before.
So true.
So like, Outkast.
We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So yeah, man, this is this go is good. Back and listen to Aquemini.
Yeah, go back and listen to Aquemini.
Go back and listen to on Stankonia, Humble to the Mumble.
Go back and,
Humble Mumble.
Go back and listen to Kim and Cookie.
Yeah.
Kim and Cookie, one of the best interludes of all time. Please.
Also, you know, the I'll Call Before I Come. Gangsta Boo's, Gangsta Boo's contribution.
Shout out Memphis. Shout out Memphis. Yeah. Hold it down, Tennessee.
Hardly home, always repping.
Always repping. But yeah, man, thank you, Outkast. We appreciate you. And
don't sleep. Big Boy still putting out music.
Big Boy just had an album
that came out with, I think, was it Purity Ring or Fantagram? No, I think it was Fantagram.
I think it was Fantagram, yeah. Who I actually have seen live, and they're pretty good. I saw them live with Action Bronson a year ago with my sister. The one who has never heard the show before. So I'll tell her that I name that. I'll make her start with this episode just because I know she'll be interested in hearing me
her
talk about
name.
Her. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She'll love to hear her own name. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
But yeah. So thank you.
Yeah.
Go, you know, hey, you know what you should do right now?
What?
Do you know what everybody should do right now?
I have to pee.
Not that.
Okay.
Do you know what everybody should do?
That is a good idea.
Go write us a review.
Oh, my God. Write us a review. Also, like, we've been getting some good emails recently.
Yeah. Keep writing.
Yeah, keep writing. We've been getting some good emails.
Thank you.
Y'all been killing it with the emails recently. Like, we've been getting some good shit. So, yeah, we appreciate the emails. Keep tweeting us and ask us about shit that you feel is ignorant, because that's a real fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That Chirac trailer.
Oh, man. That shit
made
my Friday night. Yeah, so, you know, also, like, I don't know, I just want to shout out Zola. We don't have to do that. What? What?
We got. We eventually have to do an episode, not necessarily about Zola, but I do want to do, we should actually
No,
do.
It's
we
a joked phenomenon. About this. It's a phenomenon worth commenting on. Yeah. There's a lot of shit going
folks
on with the
folks
Zola
try
situation.
To play it, but this, like, it was levels to this Zola shit.
It was, so many, like, I have levels that make me angry. I have levels that have me fucking crying, laughing. Yeah. Levels that make me depressed. Levels that make me excited. Levels that make me interested. It's levels to Zola.
Like, real
it's
time.
Lots to unpack.
I'm going to say this. Mm-hmm. The Zola story could be a season of Serial. Like, where's the lie? Where is it? Like, I would... Tell me you would not listen to 10 episodes of them digging through the Zola story Serial style.
I just need the Jarrett call. The like, Jarrett call?
Yo, it's going down. It is going down. Oh, we're going to take a break. We're going to take a hiatus. And we're going to get on that.
Yeah, we're going to get on that. Sarah Koenig, if you steal this shit.
Yo, we coming for you.
We coming for you. We officially have beef. You just call me Suge Knight. Call me Suge Knight.
Anyway, thanks, y'all.
Thanks, you guys. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye. This is a good episode.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.